Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Jim Potts back on the air, and thanks for sharing your Sunday with me. Well, today, as promised, we're going to get into that highly controversial discussion regarding the pros and cons of the Second Amendment. I'm going to be trying to give you both sides of it. Any callers that want to call in and express their opinions about it, that would be fantastic. Just as a reminder, call in at 818-602-4929. Again, that's 818-602-4929. All right. But before we get into that, I got to tell you, obviously we're listening. I'm sure hopefully all of us were listening to the news today that hit the broadcast out of Florida. And now we've got another mass shooting. And obviously, which is right in line with the topic we're going to be talking about today, but 15 shot and 4 dead. So sad, but true. It all takes it back to the same issues about this business about gun control. And this was people having fun, competing, you know, in their gaming, which is a big deal for people out there that love these games. And now it's interrupted by what appears to be, and again, these are new results in terms of this coming through here about what exactly happened. But it appears that an individual got very upset because he lost, and he pulls out a gun and starts shooting people, unfortunately. Of course, you know, the question always begs itself, what was he doing with a gun in the first place? And did he bring the gun there intentionally that if he did lose that he was going to do something? Again, we probably won't know because the individual has apparently expired, so we'll never find the truth of that matter out unless somebody who knew him is going to give us some information. For right now, though, it's an ongoing investigation. Some of the individuals down there are still, in places of security. And as I understand from the news, they're telling them to stay right where they are until they make sure that the entire premises have been secured at that point and that they will be free to leave once they ensure that everybody's safety is there. So sad news out of Florida. You know, the other thing is that I was wondering why so many shootings is Florida with these mass shootings. I'm going to do some statistics on that, actually, because we had Parkland. Now we got Jacksonville. We had Fort Lauderdale at the airport. And, of course, the most memorable one, of course, is the Pulse shooting at the nightclub there where so many people were killed and injured. All right. Well, look, we'll do a follow-up on that. Right now, let's go ahead and talk about this Second Amendment. You know, this always boils down, in my opinion, to the desire to buy a gun for protection. That in itself has some raw emotional elements, and it certainly may reflect aspects of even racial panic. Because I remember when Barack Obama got elected, there was a spike also in the sales of these things. And the surveys they say have shown that most Americans do not believe that gun violence is down, which encourages some people to buy and others to debate the fact why they shouldn't. So along these lines and what we're discussing here today, I need to mention to you about the killing of Molly. I got an email, and the email said the killing of Molly, the student, is another example of a killing by an illegal alien. The politicians have to tighten up the border. Do you agree? Well, here we go. I try not to talk about the politics of it, but to a certain aspect, you got to get pulled into this. Tightening up the immigration policy, I think, is what we need to do. These politicians have talked about that for a long time, and they just don't seem to be getting it done. I mean, one side is arguing right now that the other side that's got the majority is not doing anything. If you go back a couple of years and you look at the fact that some of these same comments were being made by the other side of the aisle about tightening up the borders, and now they're going back and forth because somebody else is in charge. I mean, it's ridiculous. You know, this issue about the Second Amendment is all a part of that as well. These guys just keep going in circles after circles after circles. This person was anonymous. You know, they didn't want to put their name, I guess, because of the fact that it's such a controversial issue regarding illegal aliens and everything that's going on. That poor student, I mean, she was just jogging, and now her family's been deprived of her. And that's got to be tough. That's got to be tough. And when these things happen, you see it on the news where other people who have had relatives murdered, you know, by these people coming across the border illegally. And, you know, it's got to be sad for them. Now, look, I try not to get on this political bandwagon because, quite frankly, other people are killed also, and it's not by anybody that's illegal. You know, these things are just, unfortunately, a part of our society, and it also goes back to where I say people have to be more careful about where they are, what they're doing, and this awareness thing. This young lady was at least aware of this individual because apparently she knew him through his girlfriend or something of that nature. So there's an association there in this particular situation. So tighten up the border. Well, we'll let the politicians, you know, argue with that one. But I definitely think that there's something that we need to do as a nation to try to keep, you know, our citizens safe. And if that's a part of it, then so be it. But let's make sure that we're putting the correct safeguards in place. And even with the immigration policy, to make sure that it's a fair immigration policy to all concerned, because obviously it is an emotional thing for people. So we'll see. So that's my answer to that. Hey, I got another email, and it said, Jim, that segment you did last week on the home invasions was great, and truer words were never spoken. My family and neighbors experienced a situation that you should mention to your listeners. We live in a gated community. Someone crashed a car into the gate, and that's the security gate, and the concrete that supports the gate as well, on a Friday evening. The gate and security at that point was gone. Now, think about it. It happened late on a Friday. It was damaged. That meant there was no way it could get fixed over the weekend. Well, Saturday night, we had all left our SUVs in the driveway as usual. Sunday morning, a lot of us came out to find our vehicles up on cinder blocks and all the tires gone. At least 10 to 12 vehicles got hit like this. You are right. We have to stay on the alert and never let our guard down. Just wanted to share my story, Alice. Well, those situations, I'm telling you, some of these criminals are very, very creative in the things that they do. You know, I always laugh and say that if we took all of these criminal minds, you know, put them in some think tank someplace and got them to think about some of the positive things that they could do with all that energy they spend in trying to get the, you know, the wrongdoings done, we'd probably be much better off. Okay, now let's get back a little bit more into the Second Amendment itself. You know, we have to understand that the gun control debate is fueled by opposing sentiments, and I think we all agree with that. You know, between those who support gun rights and individuals with anti-gun sentiments. Now, the arguments are rooted in different philosophical applications as well as statistics and facts regarding how firearms can impact society. Now, we know that, but it's important to keep in mind that even though there are strong and valid points to be made for both sides of gun control issues, this has proven to be one of the most debated and intense battles that has been fought on the political forefront. Now, through minor advances and pitfalls that have been taken by both sides, the debate of gun control issues is one that is still deadlocked and will probably continue to remain stagnant and taking significant steps towards either side of the argument. Again, you know, this thing is so emotional that the voters, you know, when they write in, they're emotional about this. The politicians are emotional about it. And you put all that emotion out there, and guess what? Nothing is getting done because these guys are going round and around and around. And at the crux of both arguments are there's these underlying questions as to what to be ultimately accomplished and choosing either side of the debate. Think about that. How do you choose either side of the debate? Well, look, First, how are firearm restrictions to be implemented without violating the Second Amendment of the Constitution? That's one of the considered centrals in terms of political and legislation, in terms of determining how to approach gun control issues. And second, a more recently considered aspect is how gun control limits or restricts crime, if at all. Now, here we go again. There's a lot of individuals out there, you know, and this issue about whether or not it's really going to restrict crime. You know, we're still going to be there. The criminals are the ones that are going to be able to find the guns, you know, even though, and then law-abiding citizens cannot get these guns. And that's always going to be there. It's just that simple. Now, this evidence and statistical facts have proven valid points for both sides of gun control issues, making it extremely difficult to determine an obvious effect or answer. Now, one final point on that is that one of the most asked questions is how would the restriction of firearms inhibit or impair a citizen's ability for self-defense? And how such a stance is viable without infringing on Second Amendment rights. Now, think about that. People want to buy these guns for what they call a self-defense. You know, there's a number of states that actually have where these individuals can you know, open carry laws. I think I talked about that in one of my other segments. And this issue about self-defense, in my opinion, yes, that's always going to be the argument. But what about the rights? That's going to be the issue, and that's what takes us back once again to the issue of the Second Amendment. The right to bear arms has proven to be somewhat of a thorn in the side of the gun control debate for both sides. Here we go again, the right to bear arms, but particular, those who favor gun control. They're all over that, the right to bear arms, the right to bear arms. Now, you know, you may recall last week, and just to refresh your memory a little bit on that, I want to take a second here and read exactly, since just a refresh, and for those of you that are coming on for the first time to listen to this, I just want you to understand exactly what it says regarding the Second Amendment. And the Second Amendment is only one sentence. And here it is, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It is a one-sentence, you know, amendment for all practical purposes. That's it. That's it. Now, the anti-gun control people are unwavering when it comes to interpretations of the Second Amendment. And I just read it to you. You know, they're unwavering. And when they look at it, it does not coincide word for word as is written in the Bill of Rights. They don't look at it that way. So the argument goes. Now, the NRA, National Rifle Association, and the Gun Owners of America are two groups that defend the constitutional provisions with all of their resources. Now, the gun control activists will often pose three concepts regarding the Second Amendment as is written. Now, I look at that and say, okay, what are we talking about here? What's the concept here? Well, I'll tell you. Number one, they feel that the provision is outdated and obsolete. When was it written? 1700s. It's obsolete. You know, their position is the fact that the forefathers did not really realize that there were going to be semi-automatic weapons at the time that they wrote it. They were dealing with muskets. And furthermore, they feel it's an ambiguity which lends for confusion and different means of interpretations of the provisions. And as a result, it must be amended to coincide with the times and be more explicit or simply be eradicated. You mean get rid of it altogether? Why do we want to get rid of an amendment altogether? So that little aspect of it, I'm not sure that I can agree with. Does it have to be properly interpreted? Of course it does. Of course it does. And by the way, if you got any opinions about getting rid of it altogether, once again, I'll tell you the number is 818-602-4929, 818-602-4929. Now, I can understand about maybe amending it to the times, but I don't know that you should really just get rid of it. Now, regarding, they always bring up this issue of, you know, the regulated militia. You know, the arms are to be kept for the sole purpose of defensive tyranny or a militaristic attempt by the government to suppress the people. I don't see that as an argument right now. I don't think there's a militaristic attempt by the government to suppress the people like that. So take away their guns. Now, it's true that there is some legislation out there that people are trying to push through, you know, regarding, you know, collecting the guns, making sure that all the bullets are accounted for. So when you go to purchase ammunition, but hey, that's not going to get rid of it, because simply what's going to happen? They're going to go underground with ammunition. They're going to start making their own. And there's already people out there, you know, that are already making their own bullets. So I don't think that's going to work. Anyway, to that extent, firearms should otherwise be restricted from other uses with few exceptions is what they feel for the gun control activists. So firearms being restricted, other uses with few exceptions. See, then you get into debate, what are the exceptions? Now, they acknowledge that the right to bear arms is not absolute. It's their position it should be subject to regulation under certain requirements, such as when, you know, our nation may be possibly threatened. Well, I get that. We do have a military that's out there, and I think that if our country ever gets threatened, I mean, if you look at, just go back in time to World War II and the bombing of Pearl Harbor, you know, so it's not like we haven't been invaded in the past or bombed in the past under those circumstances. But somebody coming to our shores these days, I don't know that it's going to happen that way in terms of some kind of major, you know, invasion. I do believe that we're going to have issues from terrorists, and that's going to be a little bit different. And I'm not sure that anybody's going to be properly prepared with the guns that they may have. Now, yes, some of these enthusiasts that have their automatic weapons, I guess that's going to be a little bit different. I get that. But, you know, basically their attitudes on this doesn't support the use of military style weapons, according to them, such as semi and fully automatic weapons by regular civilians, because they are not needed in the realms of self-defense or the protection of, you know, and protection or for hunting and recreational use. Now, I kind of talked about that in one of our earlier episodes, that they have these guns. And yes, in this particular instance, I do have an opinion. I think having these guns should be reserved for the military as well as for the law enforcement agencies that are out there. And again, that's to combat the criminals that are going to have them, such as the Hollywood shootout. I mean, it was an important lesson learned from that shootout where they had the automatic weapons. LAPD did not have them. And it really created a very bad situation. So I don't know, you know, so, you know, when you think about the positions of both sides of this, both sides really do have some good points. Let's put it that way. And of course, that's the problem with any kind of issue like this. Everybody's going to have a good piece of it and there's a bad piece of it. And there's got to be a meeting in the middle somewhere. But anyway, the way that they interpreted this, when you look at this, it serves to have, you know, that they apply a certain amount of logic in an organized and well thought out manner. Anti-gun control supporters, though, will claim that the violation of the Second Amendment is a reason why such a clause was introduced in the Constitution in the first place, for the people to protect themselves from any form of violation of civil liberties and freedoms. Well, wait a minute. You know, is that to say then because of the fact that they feel that their rights are being violated? And let's just, you know, talk about the law enforcement and some of the things that have happened out there where law enforcement have shot, and I'll just use this as an example, minorities. And now, you know, it looked like maybe there was some kind of law enforcement improper conduct. Well, so is that to say that the person then could fire back at police officers because they think that the police officers are out of line? I don't think that's going to work very well. Having been a former police officer myself, I wouldn't agree with that. When you're talking about civil liberties that may be infringed upon, look, I'm not gonna argue about the fact that somebody doesn't have a right to protect themselves, but it's a slippery slope when you start talking about shooting at police officers. It really honestly is. Now, look, through the interpretation of the right to bear arms, you know, because that's a piece of it, the right to bear arms, that's completely subject to bias and convenience. The arguments posed by each side have strong and valid points that have to be considered to the full extent in order to understand all of the gun control issues. Don't just pinpoint different pieces. You got to put the entire package together. Now, one of the arguments is that's getting the most attention in recent times, of course, is gun violence and children, you know, getting killed, you know, with the schools. And now you have situations that kind of heat that up when you have these individuals down, as an example, down in New Mexico, who turned around and were training kids to go into the schools, you know, become school shooters. Well, is that a gun control issue? Is that a Second Amendment violation of some sort? The reason why I say that is because who's giving them the weapons? Adults. And see, if you really, really look at some of these situations that happen, where are these kids getting the guns from? They're not walking into stores and purchasing them. You look at the situation where some of these states now are saying that we have to, you know, make the age of purchasing these types of weapons, you know, to 21. Well, I said in the past, if a father wants to buy his son a weapon because he wants to take him out target shooting or take him to the gun range to shoot up the gun range, they're not going to worry about whether or not the law says 21. What are you adding? What are you adding to that law that says if a parent gives a 19-year-old a weapon like that to use, then what? Okay, we got a caller coming here. Hello. Hi, you're live on the air with Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. Do you have a question or comment to share?
Yeah, I do, actually. You mentioned earlier in the segment about the criminal element and guns. And I just kind of wanted to point out that in my community, in the last few years, crime has gone up 100%. And we had a representative from the city councilman's office. We had LAPD there. And the officer representing the police department pretty much said that they do not have the resources to respond in a timely fashion. And the community as a whole was pretty much frustrated with this. And I've read articles, I've seen it on TV, I've watched documentaries where there are black market guns out there. And regardless of how much gun control you have, that criminal element will still find a way to get those weapons. And my fear is if the police can't respond in time, what is a person supposed to do? You know, if the boogeyman's at the door.
Well, let's just talk about that. You indicated, let's just back up for a second. So you're saying LAPD. So obviously you're calling from the Los Angeles area, California.
I am.
Right. Okay. Now look, so when you talk about the police response time, now you're talking about, and you're saying that they're saying that they don't have the manpower. So now is what we're talking about is funding again. Where do they get the funding, you know, to be able to, you know, to have, you know, I don't want to say a cop on every block. You know, I grew up in, a part of my growing up was in New York City, in Brooklyn, actually. Back in those days, we had cops on the beat. They actually walked the streets. You know, they walked the streets. The police officer knew everybody within their given walking area. They
ideal. That would be wonderful if we could have that back. But again, like you say, it is a question of funding.
It's going to be a question of funding. But to go directly to your question, when you say how is a person supposed to defend themselves? Well, to me, let's just break that out. You know, a person on the street is one thing. And a person in their home is something else. Now, if they're out on the street, you know, and they're confronted by a mugger, all right, somebody with a gun or somebody's got some other kind of agenda, it is very, very difficult. But that's where, you know, hopefully people will start being aware and recognizing sometimes that there's a threat coming in their direction and take some kind of action. And by literally just paying attention to what's going on. You know, have you ever walked down the street and somebody's walking towards you and kind of like the hairs on the back of your neck stood up a little bit? Has that ever happened?
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
And somebody behind me.
Yeah, you know, and then people, looking behind them, where are you? Are you in a well-lit area? Are you in a darkened area? I mean, there's a lot of things that people need to take into consideration. Now, this poor girl, Molly, she was out running. Yeah, now she was out in a situation where she was jogging, and she was jogging, I think, along a roadway. And, you know, this person had followed her, but then he knew her. He knew where she was jogging and things of that nature. So sometimes the other things that happen with people, people know who you are. See, that's a factor as well.
Now, no, I agree. You have to be aware of your surroundings 24/7
or
every waking moment. I've heard some of your other segments.
Oh, okay. And now see, but let's move to the question because you say about your home. Well, in terms of the Second Amendment as an example.
Well, if I could just interrupt for a quick second.
Yeah.
So in reference to the Second Amendment, as you were going to allude to, limiting the guns or gun control, complete gun control, I mean, doesn't that lend itself to have an age-old argument? The bad guy's going to get the guns one way or the other. That's what bad people do. And then you and I, being legal, law-abiding citizens, are just going to be prey.
Well, that's the arguments, and that's why the people for, that are against the gun control, that's what they say. They say that's exactly what's going to happen to criminals. I mean, you know, let's look at Chicago. The guys that are killing people out there in Chicago, okay, are those guys going in and buying those guns, you know, in the store? I doubt it.
I doubt it, too.
You know? And, you know, and these people are getting killed by drive-bys and things of that nature. I mean, you don't have people sitting out on the street. You know, they got a party going on, and some of the party has spilled over, you know, into the front yard or whatever, and people are driving by and shooting them. Now, gun control or not, how is that going to stop that? That's never going to stop that.
Right.
You know, so that's one of the issues. I mean, it's sad but true. Look, I don't think that we can 100% protect ourselves. It's just not going to happen. I mean, we can put as many safeguards on as we want. We can try and put as many police officers on as we want. But the reality is that the people who intend to do harm are going to do harm. It's us trying to eliminate as much of that as possible by, again, paying attention to what's going on. Now, when you start talking about, you know, protecting your home, well, to me, that's a different story because the issue on the Second Amendment and the right to bear arms, I look at that as an issue that addresses, again, these semi-automatic weapons, you know, et cetera, and, you know, these guys being able to shoot people up in the street. You know, last week I talked about, you know, home invasions. Well, I think that if you're in your home, I think you have every right to have a weapon in your home, but I would suggest a legally purchased weapon in your home, okay, where, in fact, if somebody is invading your home and you're in fear of your life, and that's always the argument, you're in fear of your life, that you do whatever you have to do to protect you and your family. Now, you know, I've had students who have asked me or commented, well, you know, we've always heard that if you, you know, you shoot the person outside, drag them back inside. And I always think, look, don't you think law enforcement that's been at this a long time are going to know by the blood spatters across the street or follow the blood trail when you drag them back inside? So, you know, I'm not giving out legal advice here, but the realities are is that when people are coming into your home, obviously there's a bigger argument that I was in fear of my life versus you coming downstairs and you see them exiting out the front door. You shoot somebody exiting and going out the front door, in my opinion, you're going to be in trouble because the law is clear that you can never take human life in the protection of property. You can take human life for the protection of other human life, but you can't take it just for property. And that's going to be a problem.
Right.
You know,
well, I think that the people that go out and they get a gun, I will say this, and they want to use it for home defense, I think a lot of people take that way too lightly. I think that someone needs to be proficient with the weapon of their choosing and understand the responsibility of that. It's huge. It's not just, oh, I'm going to shoot somebody. It's there's a huge responsibility. And like you said, the legal ramifications of that, even if you're protecting your own life, are immense.
You could still be drawn into a courtroom situation to defend yourself. And that itself is going to be costly. Now, there's a kind of a little ironic saying that people have out there. Hey, you know, I would rather be judged by 12 than killed by one or something like that. Meaning I'll take my chances with the jury versus this guy that I'm in a conflict with, you know, right then. You know, so I'll have a jury of 12 that will determine whether I'm right or wrong. But at least I'd rather be there in a situation where I'm alive versus dead because of what this person, you know, may have intended to do. But getting back to your particular neighborhood, you know, one of the things that neighborhoods have done, you know, it's just neighborhood awareness, you know, these groups, what is it called when you have the
neighborhood watch?
Yeah, there you go. The neighborhood watch group that, that people can formulate, you know, but that's how Zimmerman got into that situation down there in Florida, where he turned around and shot, you know, that young black man. And, you know, he got himself in trouble. But I think that there was issues about that whole situation with Zimmerman anyway, quite frankly. But neighborhood watches are one way when the police department doesn't have enough people that you can at least kind of band together to keep an eye on things. I don't think that everybody that's on a neighborhood watch and is watching the neighborhood should walk around with guns, obviously. But certainly paying attention to things, sharing information. And I'll tell you something else. How's the lighting? You know, you can always complain to the city and say, hey, we need better lighting on our street. How's the lighting in your neighborhood?
It's for the most part pretty good. The problem that we're experiencing now more than anything is not your random criminals, so to speak, but the drastic increase in homelessness and people taking advantage of vacant homes or just crimes of opportunity, bicycles, breaking into cars and things like that. And I'm getting way off the subject here, but the taking of certain felonies such as burglary and making them misdemeanors certainly doesn't help. But yeah.
Well, that's tough.
Sorry, got off the beaten path here.
No, that's okay. Because I was getting ready. That's okay. I was getting ready to bring you back on the path anyway. Because if we start talking about the Second Amendment, you know, this business that this week we heard, where the federal government is going to encourage, you know, teachers to have guns in the classroom. Now, one has to think, okay, how does that apply to Second Amendment? I mean, to the gun activists, this, you know, I mean, here we go with another controversy again. Where do you draw the line? That's the problem, you know. So, hey, but listen, I appreciate you calling in. And
my pleasure.
Thank you very much. Take care.
All righty. Bye-bye.
All right, bye. Okay, always good to get a caller in there. You know, getting back on what I was talking about a few moments ago, and again, anybody else that wants to call in and express an opinion is very welcome, 818-602-4929. You know, I was talking about children is where I left off, you know, and the issue again is whether it would be that children have access to firearms that acquire them with malicious purpose or intent to commit a crime, or is it simply an accidental discharge of a weapon, you know, that finds or gets their parents' handgun, et cetera. I mean, those are all the things that you have to look at, you know. And then you have these events like Columbine, Parkland, Florida, and going back a little bit further, even Virginia Tech. You know, national awareness on this gun violence by young people has got to be brought to a forefront. And yes, since the Parkland shooting, there appears to be more and more people taking an interest in that. So we'll see, especially with this issue I was just talking to the caller about with teachers with guns in the classrooms, which I am not an advocate of. I just don't think that they're going to be highly qualified to be able to do that. Now, look, gun control supporters subsequently have rallied in the past to propose more restrictions on the laws to further, to try to limit the availability of firearms. But how are you going to be able to do that? The availability, now you're talking about cutting into the manufacturing. You're talking about cutting into businesses to put them out there. And believe me, there's going to be a strong cry against that. It's not going to work. Anti gun control, you know, people have responded by making it a responsibility for parents to educate their families about the dangers of firearms. And I think that that's good. You can educate them. But look, if a child has a malicious intent in mind, educating them or not, they're still going to do something if they want to. If they want to take some kind of action, you know, in a school setting. I don't know the age of this individual today that was at the gaming, because I guess gamers can be of all ages these days. So I don't know. So we'll find that out. But these laws that they're talking about, the Second Amendment, it's not going to bar children from acquiring guns. It's just not going to happen. Now, there could be certain provisions that could be taken, such as storing guns in gun safes or applying trigger locks to the weapons. You know, that's just as important about educating people about firearms. Now, I can tell you my wife has brought that issue up, where we've had discussions regarding, you know, these locks on the guns or putting them in gun safes where the kids don't have access to them, so they don't get them easily. So I think that that's important. You know, we have to start looking at it in that direction, as opposed to saying you can't have the guns at all if you're an adult. Now, the anti-gun control supporters stress that it's the responsibility of the parents, like I said, to educate these children. Now, look, there's another common argument that's proposed by gun control activists, is that the government has a duty to society and the people to keep firearms away from those individuals that should never be in the possession of firearms. How is that going to be possible? First of all, there are so many guns out there. Then you turn around and you have burglaries where people break into people's homes and those guns are not secured, and now they get them. It's not just homes. They also break into some of these gun stores and steal guns and then sell them on the black market. So how do you cut it out altogether with the millions of guns that are going to be out there? Education, is that going to be enough? Now, look, there's already laws in place listing restrictions placed on certain people, such as convicted, you know, felons, you know, that prohibit their possession, purchasing, and carrying of firearms. I mean, that's already there. So with some of them, when they get caught with a firearm, okay, they're heading back, you know, back to the, you know, back to jail. But some of these people are first-timers. I mean, you know, look at this guy in Las Vegas. I don't believe he had a record. So he had access to them. Look at some of these other shooters. They don't have records, you know, for these mass shootings I'm talking about. That's a whole different situation. Those restrictions are not going to stop them from getting them. Now, yes, it's true. Some of the restrictions are going to infringe on some slight level upon civil liberties, and the cost will prove worth the price if the guns are kept out of the hands of criminals. All right, that's only one aspect of it. Gun rights supporters are going to argue that more restrictions placed on already strict gun laws will simply prove to be useless. Criminals will always find a means of obtaining what they want or what they need. And that is why they are criminals and they operate on the fringe of society. More laws and regulations, is the argument, will simply prove to be a hindrance and inconvenience to those who legally are allowed to have firearms. And that part is the argument, because it infringes on their civil liberties. I guess when you look at that, you say, look, if I've never been a criminal, no intention of being a criminal, why should I not be able to buy a firearm that I can protect my household with, or go to the gun range, or, I don't know, go hunting, whatever I want to do? That's the problem. We live in a country based upon civil liberties, and that does go back to a long time ago. This country was founded on civil liberties. How are you going to take some of that away? And this would definitely do it. Now, any proposal of having firearms registered with the appropriate government authorities, that's going to be an issue. And it's also been suggested by the gun control advocates. And they apparently claim that this will make gun owners more accountable for their actions and limit the availability of firearms only to responsible individuals. Well, what's the definition of a responsible individual? Because on the surface, somebody could appear to be a very responsible individual, but at home, they're a holy terror. Or they have a mental issue, but they appear to be a very responsible individual. They've never been in any trouble before. The Colorado shooter in the movie theater. He didn't have any issues before that I was aware of, but yet you saw what happened. The registration of firearms will only affect criminals, and it will aid law enforcement in keeping track of who owns and possesses firearms, is what the gun control advocates, you know, profess. Now, those supporting gun control rights responded to a suggestion that claim it's an enormous intrusion of a person's privacy. When you start talking about registering guns, look, let me tell you something. I came out here in 1974, and that's when they had the slasher, not the hillside slasher, but the Skid Row slasher. And that was amazing to me, is that they had somebody go around. Not that I was hanging out on Skid Row, but I'm coming from back east. I was a college student, dropped out for a year. You know, I'll tell you what I did. I went and bought myself a 32 automatic. I didn't know. I was reading all this about somebody running around slashing people. I bought myself a 32 automatic. It was registered then. I still have that gun to this day. Never had an issue. All right. But I have it. It's a comfort level that you have something like that. I've got, you know, other guns now, but that was my first one out here for sure. Because why? I was concerned about my well-being. Now, I did not carry it with me on the street. It's in the home. You know, so the registration issue of it, personally, I don't have an issue with that. Why can't we register the guns? You're going to buy a gun, have the gun registered. I don't think that's a privacy issue in terms of that. When I think about privacy, I think about other things about privacy within my home. You know, if the government is going to start monitoring citizens at this level, then what would stop them from monitoring other aspects while further intruding and violating civil liberties is what the argument is. Furthermore, they say a registry of this scope would eventually be paid by the taxpayers, where that money can go to more important and expedient causes. I don't know. You know, anytime you start talking about the taxpayers paying, where the money is going, we always argue about where the money's going. It's like this 10 cents for purchasing bags. Where's that money really going? Who knows? They do some of this stuff and say it goes toward education, but come on. Doesn't seem like it. Anyway, you know, one other argument that they make is that, you know, the more recent gun control issues are focused by gun control supporters is about these semi-automatic weapons. We know the semi-automatic weapons are a big deal. Now, there's already a ban, though. You know, it's been implemented on automatic weapons. Semi-automatic firearms are just as dangerous. In addition to that possible threat from that, semi-automatics are not needed for recreational use. And I know a lot. I go to the gun range, and you see these guys, man, they're blowing up these targets with these things. They're just out there having fun. How do you take that away? Well, the problem is, what happens when one of those individuals at some point snaps? Something goes wrong in their life. They develop a mental condition. Now they've got these guns. Those are the arguments. You know? Those are the arguments. So, you know, they say, why should citizens settle to protect themselves with firearms that are not equally as potent for the purpose of defense and survival? Gun control advocates offer some serious valid points that can be used to consider the implementation to further, you know, firearm, restrictions. Again, you know, when they have them out there, I get it. How do you protect yourself? Look, what are you telling me? Are these guys advocating that you turn around and then okay, if he's got a semi-automatic weapon, I want one. So I have one. So what does this become? You know, our streets become, you know, these battlegrounds, because everybody's got that doesn't make sense either. And that's why, again, I profess the fact that I think those weapons just need to be in the hands of law enforcement and the military. Now, you know, just as those who favor gun control have their reasoning and logic behind their intent, anti-gun supporters also pose worthy arguments to oppose gun restrictions and laws. And the main argument presented by gun rights advocates is that the restriction of firearms is a violation of civil rights. The forefathers of the United States included it into law because of the experience of tyranny and imperialism that it had on the colonies, and the people were being abused and forbidden from their natural civil rights. Okay, these aren't the colonies anymore. That's why these are the United States now. And this issue about the right to bear arms is a human right to protect oneself from, you know, these kind of offenses, you know, against mankind. And it must be upheld by the government to the extent that the law provided. And history has shown on several occasions where governments in the world seize citizen weapons and were shortly submitted to horrific acts of cruelty and tyranny. Well, you know, I these countries that have that, I get it. Every place is not like that. again, this is the United States, and I'd like to think that, you know, things for us is a little bit different, but it is what it is. It is what it is. Now, I think that the key to ensuring this you know, any type of uprising that, it, you know, not for it not to happen is by providing citizens the information needed to battle, you know, the democracy and knowledge, not firearms, just simply education. Let's have a serious conversation with this. We need to get these politicians to meet somewhere in the middle, okay, so that we can get this matter, these matters resolved. Now, you think this is a new issue? Let me tell you something. Once again, not a new issue. Not a new issue. No, we're getting another call, so let me see. Hi, you're live on the air with Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio. Do you have a question or comment to share?
Hi, Jim. This is Sandra.
Hello, Sandra.
Hi. I'm going to say something that's going to sound real, real crazy.
Okay.
Go ahead. They say guns, people kill people. Guns don't kill people. I beg to differ.
Okay.
Bullets kill people.
Okay.
Why do we tranquilize animals, yet we kill people with bullets? Why can't we make tranquilizers and outlaw bullets?
Okay. Let's talk about that real quick. Oh, no, go ahead.
Here's my crazy concept.
Okay.
If you kind of killed my concept when you said the outlaws can get things in their hands anyway, right?
Right.
They can get the guns in their hands or whatever. Okay. If they didn't make bullets and an outlaw had the tranquilizer bullets instead of bullets that kill people, if they wanted to rob you, they tranquilized you. They still got your possessions, right? But you live to see another day, right?
Oh, yeah. But let me just tell you something. Let's be real.
Let me get another point.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead.
If the policeman shot that black person with a tranquilizer instead of a bullet, there wouldn't be all the rioting or whatever. That they would still be able to see another day, and they would still capture that person and jail that person, right?
Right. If the police
officers... Bullets kill people. Guns don't kill people. Bullets kill people. Why do we tranquilize the animals, yet we kill people?
Well, I mean, you know, police officers do carry... Okay, weapons that are not with bullets. You know what I'm talking about, right? They use tasers.
Okay.
They use tasers. They do have tasers. Yes, ma'am.
They're not using tasers.
I saw on the news the other day where a police officer had a guy, and the guy was running away and used a taser on him, took him right down. The guy was not dead. The guy was tased. But let me just tell you something. Okay, from a law enforcement standpoint, we just got through talking about the criminals will still have their guns and the criminals will still get their bullets. You can buy it off the internet where people can do reloads and load up their own bullets now. You can buy the lead, you can buy the gunpowder, you can get all of that. So if a criminal wants to commit a crime and here's a law enforcement personnel with a gun that only has tranquilizers that you're talking about and he's got a gun with bullets, now is what happens is that police officer's life is at risk. I don't disagree with you on the fact that some of these police officers have done the wrong things and used poor judgment. That is going to happen. But look at the percentage of that.
And I'm not just talking about police officers. I'm talking about outlawing the bullets, period. And just make it just hard for them to get criminals. And everybody, I'm just saying, make it harder for them to get. Just outlaw bullets.
Are you familiar with that bill? Are you in California?
No, I'm your sister-in-law.
Oh, okay. You know, you're. Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Right. Well, okay. That's different.
This is just a crazy concept that I have. Just let's outlaw the bullets. Bullets kill people. Guns don't kill people.
Okay.
It's bullets that kill people.
You're calling from Louisiana.
I'm calling from Louisiana. Yeah.
Okay. So now look. Well. Okay. Well, you just said Sandra. I'm not picking up on it like that. But yeah, because I get a lot of different times. Okay. So now you've told me that. But look. But understand something about the bullets. See, in California, along the lines of what you're talking about, it looks like now is what they're going to be doing is that when you go to purchase bullets, you're going to have to register on the bullets that you purchased. Now, that's going to be real interesting because if that happens, now they're going to be able to know exactly who has what kind of gun in the household. Think about that. If you go to buy a 30-06, okay, if you go to buy a 30-06 and now you got to register, you're buying 30-06 bullets. Now what's going to happen is the government's going to have a record in that household. That guy's got a 30-06. So,
okay.
So they are doing some things. Again, every state's not doing that. I can tell you California is already moving in that direction. But, Sandra, I appreciate you calling in. My time is going to be just about up right now. But I do appreciate you calling in, and thank you so much for your comments.
All right.
I appreciate
it.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. All right. You've been listening to Jim Potts at LA Talk Radio. Had a couple of great callers coming in there. And these are issues that you can see that people come from different directions. I think that those two directions were kind of the opposite, but then that just goes to show you that this is what it's about. Look, it's time to close out the show, but let me remind you that you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/JimPottsAuthor. Be sure to join me next week. Next week, we're going to finish a little slight discussion on this, and then we'll be talking about some other things. But I just want to give you next week, I don't know, just about 5 or 10 minutes on the some of the cases that started way back in the late 1800s, and 1700s, quite frankly. All right, so we'll talk about a little bit about that. We're also going to talk about some open forum security measures as well. All right. Thank you very much for your time. I appreciate you listening to me and sharing your Sunday with me. Have a good week. Bye.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.